21st Century Radio is sponsored by Hieronymus & Company. Now more of 21st Century Radio with your host, Dr. Zoe Hieronymus.
It's all about soul. It's all about faith and a deeper devotion. It's all about soul. 'Cause under love is a stronger emotion.
Welcome to 21st Century Radio. I'm Zoe Hieronymus. Laura Kortner is our executive producer, and Noah Dankner runs our board. When Joseph B. and Louisa Rhine joined Professor William McDougall at the then newly founded Duke University in 1927, the field of investigation into psychic phenomena was known as psychical research. At that time, psychical research was mainly concerned with working with mediums in the search for evidence of an afterlife. Today, the Rhine Institute continues the mission and work of its founders, but with a broadened scope that is reflected in its new subtitle, An Institute for the Study of Consciousness. John Kruth, Executive Director of the Rhine Research Center, joins us to talk about the Institute's work in the science of parapsychology, as well as to share with us the types of education and resources they provide for the public. They are known for having fostered and continuing to foster a community for individuals with personal and professional interest in the psi phenomena. Thank you so much for joining us, John.
No, it's very nice to meet you. I'm happy to be here.
So in the early day, I think some people may recall the Rhine Institute for the ESP cards and the dice games. And share with us what was originally being done, and then we'll get to all the wonderful ways things have progressed.
Well, as you mentioned, it's been going on since the 1920s when Dr. Rhine went to Duke University. He started to want to understand more about mediums and how they were communicating with people. Now, at that time, mediums were very different than they are today. Mediums then were doing more magic acts than anything else. You would see trumpets appear and things float across the room. Faces would come out and clap and objects would fly around. But Dr. Rhine found that as he looked into mediums, there was something else going on. Some of them were actually giving information that didn't seem possible that they would know. So he started to wonder, how could they possibly be getting this information? Are they getting this information from spirits that are coming and whispering in their ear and telling them this information? Or is there some other mechanism that we might be able to learn about? Well, when he started to look into mediums, he realized he couldn't provide any proof and strong evidence that there were spirits without first determining what the limits of human ability were. When he started to look into human abilities, he did this utilizing Zener cards. These are the ESP cards that you might have seen, on Ghostbusters or some other shows where they have the circle, the square, the wavy lines. And he used these to try to determine whether people could communicate telepathically to each other, whether one person could send thoughts to another person. He also used these to determine whether someone could determine the future. For example, if I have a deck of cards and I say, I'm going to flip over 25 cards. Tell me what order they're going to come out in. And then I flip over the cards and see how many match. He also looked at these cards and used some other mechanisms to try to see if he could determine ways that people might be able to see from a distance or see something that's hidden. What was at that time called clairvoyance and now is more commonly known as remote viewing. So Dr. Rhine used Zener cards for a wide number of applications, but the main thing that was special about what he was doing is he was bringing people into a controlled environment and using very controlled mechanisms to try to look at these phenomena that people have been experiencing their whole lives. We've heard stories from religious scholars and spiritualists and many people throughout the world for centuries about experiences that at that time were being ignored by the scientists. Dr. Rhine brought it into the academic world, and at Duke University, he started the first parapsychology lab in the United States. And we're still running today. It's been 75 years and we're still operating.
So beautiful. I mean, what a great contribution to the world, not just our own nation. So when you look back at the early work that Joseph and Louisa Rhine started at Duke University and then today, there's obviously a big change in the equipment that you can be used. So I know one of the things that you all use are very modern techniques that allow, I guess, what are best called subtle measurements of psi.
Oh, yes, yes. Originally, what J.B. Rhine was looking for was evidence, do these abilities exist in a way that we can capture them in a laboratory setting? It was apparent many people were having these experiments or these experiences. But could we create experiments that would prove that these were called proof-oriented experiments to demonstrate that these actually exist? Well, that work went on for, approximately 30 or 40 years, and enough evidence was produced in that time that people in the field of parapsychology agree that there's something going on. So we've now gone past the idea of, does telepathy actually occur? Does clairvoyance or remote viewing actually occur? Does precognition exist in certain conditions? Now we're trying to determine how it works. This is what we call process-oriented research. We're trying to look into different mechanisms that might enable it. So instead of using the old deck of cards with the symbols on it, the Zener cards, now we're using more computer-oriented technology to do tests and looking at psychological mechanisms that might exist in people who do really well on the test. So people who demonstrate a really, really nice affinity for telepathy or precognition, we give them psychological tests as well and see if we can find a correlation between the two.
How interesting.
So this is some of the work that John Palmer has been doing for many years at the Rhine. And he's our research director and also the editor of the Journal of Parapsychology.
I was going to say, before we get to the Rhine Bioenergy Lab, can we step back for a second to parapsychology? Because it can sometimes mean something to one person and not the same to another. And I know, as you all write, it's a component of, quote, the broader study of consciousness and the mind. And then for the Rhines Institute, you write, parapsychologists and in general study five broad areas. And I thought it might be useful to walk through them very briefly. The first one you mentioned, telepathy.
Yes. Telepathy is mind-to-mind communication. It's what people typically would call mind reading, although it's not really mind reading. It's any type of communication that might occur between people where they don't speak or don't give hand signals or something.
Mm-hmm.
Telepathy is mind-to-mind communication.
Or, as I like to talk about, trans-species telepathy, you know, when a human can hear an animal and animals obviously can hear each other, but I guess testing that's a whole nother bailiwick. And then another aspect of these five broad areas is clairvoyance, or what you call remote viewing. And describe how you would qualify that.
Sure. Clairvoyance or remote viewing is when you're able to have perceptions of something that's hidden, whether it's something that's in an envelope, a dark envelope, maybe something that's in a desk drawer in another room, or even something that's halfway around the world. There are people who get perceptions of these things from a distance without having any physical mechanisms.
I mean, there might be people wondering, is the Rhine Institute looking for the Malaysian plane? You know, because remote viewers, of course, do that sort of thing for the military all the time. I wonder if there's a concerted group doing some work on this.
The Rhine does have a remote viewing group, but
mm-hmm.
we do not do active. It's more of a practice group
mm-hmm.
and helping us to learn more about what the phenomena is.
Mm-hmm. Well, it'd be good practice. Tell them Zoe asked for a little assignment tonight. Could they all do a little remote viewing on the abduction of the Malaysian airline? Was it alien forces that controlled it? And I don't mean necessarily alien consciousness, but something outside the Earth spectrum. Anyway.
Right.
All right. So you all do that. And then you also look at precognition.
Yes. Precognition is information that travels through time, whether someone can know something about the future. Or retrocognition is knowledge of the past. Historically, it's been called precognition, but it could be about the future or the past.
And then another of these five, and I think it's great to go through these if you don't mind, and thank you so much for doing it, is PK or psychokinesis, and what is this?
PK or psychokinesis is mind to matter interaction. It's when there's people actually are able to affect or control the physical world around them in some way without touching it physically. You might see people who use these things called psi wheels, which are like little aluminum foil pinwheels inside of a jar, and they try to move these things with their intentions. Whether it's being how they're doing it, we aren't really sure. This is part of the mechanisms that we're looking into.
But PK can also happen without willful intent.
Yes, it can.
Because I used to affect machinery in a horrible way, computer stuff. I'd get around it, it'd shut down, go haywire. Our staff can vouch to that truth. I don't anymore. I think I've calmed down enough that I don't anymore, but I used to.
Well, I'm going to have to talk to you a little bit more about how you did that, because that is a wider and wider phenomenon these days. At the run, we get calls and letters from people all the time who are having different experiences, and we are having more and more people calling about having PK experiences, specifically with electronics.
Yeah.
I think one of the reasons for that is that people carry electronics with them everywhere they go now.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so it's more obvious to people when they're affecting them.
And we could talk about it later, theoretically, about the energetic waves that the electronics work on. The frequencies that they work on might just be more accessible because they're not as high as other frequencies we might be receiving. Mm-hmm. So the fifth of these five aspects of parapsychology that the Ryan Institute focuses on is survival studies.
Yes. Survival is a larger field. It encompasses a number of things, and it was added to parapsychology in more recent years, probably within the last 30 years it was added. Survival has to do with anything that would demonstrate that the human soul, spirit, consciousness of any sort, personality, can exist and survive outside of the physical body. And this includes things like people who look at near-death experiences, out-of-body experiences, look at ghosts or spirits. All of these things are part of survival studies.
That's so broad. It's just phenomenal that all of this is going on in one location and making it possible for very serious students and professionals to work together to advance it. Congratulations. It's really just a great progress. And it's so interesting because as places like the Rhine, who really have been the pioneers and have carried forward in such a broad, expansive-minded way, other labs in normative universities are beginning to move in this way because of their computer technology and their effort to bring mind control into machine. It interests me so much that some of us as humans have gone specifically forward out of our own innate capacities, while others are coming to this through machinery.
Yes. Well, you know, when you see science fiction movies that are over-exaggerating a lot of these abilities that we've been talking about tonight.
Yeah.
You see things like the X-Men or, you know, some of the horror movies where people are moving things with their mind.
Yeah. I think there's a new show called,
how can we do this?
Well, there's a new show called Believe where I think I haven't seen it. I've just seen it promoted on satellite where some kid raises things and destroys things with her mind and has all these powers. So coming back though to, well, we'll have to take a break. And when we come back, I'd like to talk about how all these things hinge together, whether it's theoretic or explained. We'll be right back. If you're just joining us, I'm Zoe Hieronymus. John Kruth, who's executive director of the Ryan Institute, is with us. Follow up with their amazing offerings. Folks, you can go take part in these things down in North Carolina and elsewhere. www.rhine.org.
Hello, this is Dr. Nick Begich, independent researcher in science and technology. You can find out more about me at earthpulse.com. And you're listening to 21st Century Radio with Zoe Hieronymus.
Welcome back to 21st Century Radio. www.21stcenturyradio.com is the place to go for links to all our guests and all our shows, which are archived there for free. John Kruth, Executive Director of the Ryan Institute, joins us currently, and we are talking about the most magnificent work that has gone on at the Ryan Institute since 1927. We've gone over five aspects of parapsychology: telepathy, clairvoyance or remote viewing, precognition, PK or psychokinesis, and survival studies. So now, having said that, that was easy for me, John. Now the good work's for you. So what connects all these things?
Well, that's an interesting question, and this is really what we've been studying and trying to look into. How do these things work, and how do they all fit together? Because they are very interesting because they're not studied by the normal sciences. The traditional biology, physics, chemistry don't look at these phenomena. But people have been having these experiences for so long that they really need to be studied. So when J.D. Ryan started to study telepathy, clairvoyance, and precognition, he grouped them together in a single category called extrasensory perception, or ESP. And this was the original focus of parapsychology, was a study of ESP. Now, these pieces that we've broken down, telepathy, clairvoyance, and precognition, all were broken into different pieces to make it possible to separate them in a laboratory environment and say, now we're going to test telepathy, now we're going to test clairvoyance, and now we're going to test precognition. Over the years, we found that it's very hard to define which of these is actually being used in different situations. Is it all precognition? Perhaps it's all telepathy. It's very difficult to tease out which of these phenomena it is. So what we now call, what we used to call telepathy, precognition, and clairvoyance, we now call general ESP. And that's a single category of phenomena that we study.
Is this clarification of these categories unique to the Ryan, or is everybody sort of in the field of parapsychology now calling telepathy, clairvoyance, and precognition general ESP?
It's in the field of parapsychology.
Okay.
It's called general ESP, and it's being used quite commonly throughout the field now. It's just too difficult when we're doing laboratory experiments. And within the scientific world, we may still try to tease out the differences, but it's too difficult to really explain the technicalities of each of the different pieces. So we use the term general ESP because they all demonstrate the same thing: knowledge or information coming from a source that is not physical in nature. So somehow there's a non-local base of knowledge that is coming into the mind, or into the senses of a person having a perception. This is one of the things that people like Larry Dossey has spoken quite a bit about in his book, One Mind. This is a
beautiful book, don't you think? Oh, my gosh.
Oh,
I told
wonderful.
Brother Larry, what a contribution.
Oh, yes. It's amazing because it really demonstrates. And I'm going to tie this into survival as well, because it really demonstrates that we are all connected in ways we may not even realize. And things that we do are affecting other people. People are getting subtle perceptions of each other all the time. We're getting subtle perception of events that are occurring halfway around the world. What we used to call remote viewing and clairvoyance, people are feeling these things naturally. And everyone is getting these natural impulses. So everything we do has an effect. This is all related to the idea that consciousness is not contained only within the brain. And there is substantial evidence that's been presented within the field of parapsychology that demonstrates that there is information that is not coming from within the brain.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, and it's so interesting because in the Kabbalistic tradition, we'll speak of the human as being both emanators and receivers. And it's just so interesting that the ancient way of describing what we are is akin to the modern laboratory's effort to understand, how do we pick up signaled information? How do we take it in? How do we interpret it? How do we translate light, basically, into meaning? I mean, that's my take on it after years and years of doing all this kind of work as well. And to think that as biocapacitors, we're not these dense physical beings. We are actually light beings that have access to so much more than we necessarily give ourselves credit for accessing.
Yes, and this has led some of our research into the direction of studying light. What we do at the Rhine, one of the main experiments we're working on now, is related to determining physical characteristics that physical changes in characteristics of people and their environments when they are expressing ESP. We call it the Physical Factors Laboratory, and one component of it is our bioenergy lab. In this laboratory, we bring in people who they claim to be healers. They have long careers as healers. We don't certify people as healers, but they're people who say they're healers. People who are martial artists, who say that they're working with chi. And people who've done meditation for a long time, and they talk about the kundalini energies that move through them. We bring them into our lab, and we try to determine whether there are any changes around their environment or in the people. In this lab, the bioenergy lab, we have an ultraviolet light detector. It's extremely sensitive. It will actually detect a single photon of ultraviolet light every half second. So it's extremely sensitive.
Why ultraviolet being the range that you're working in?
When we're looking at all of these people I spoke about,
right?
Energetic healers, chi masters, and meditators, they talk about this energy that they feel. They're pushing an energy. They're pulling an energy. They might be manipulating an energy. And if you talk to a physicist or a chemist about energy, they're going to say, you know, there's two different types of energy. There's potential energy and there's kinetic energy. And neither one of those is what you're describing. So I don't know what that is. But they talk so much about energy that one of the researchers at the Rhine, Bill Joins, about 25 years ago, said, what type of invisible energy is there? He's an electrical engineer who works with light.
Right.
Light is energy. It can be converted to energy using standard physics equations. So he said, well, this is an energy, and we're not seeing it. Let's look for light in the ranges that are beyond human vision. And so he started looking just above in the infrared range and just below in the ultraviolet range. And we found through experimentation that there are certain people, a very small percentage. We've had about 140 people or so have gone through that lab over a number of years. And about, I would say, probably about 8 or 9% now are able to control the emissions of ultraviolet light that come from their body. So what we find is we bring a healer in, and we take a baseline on them. They just get a reading on what type of light is coming from their body. And then we say, start your healing. And when they do, the ultraviolet light starts increasing. So apparently, something that they're doing when they're doing their healing work is sending ultraviolet light from their bodies. And when we tell them to stop, the light goes back to normal again. So we can tell that they have an active and intentional control over this light. This light that we're detecting, this ultraviolet light, is what's being now called in biology, biophotons. This is part similar to many other phenomena that have been studied by parapsychologists in the past. It's becoming accepted into the traditional sciences. Its biophotons are now being studied in upper-level biology courses.
You would hope so.
When
you look at all the centuries of healing through gems and light, and the understanding that sound is a frequency that literally affects the cell of the body. I mean, you go back to all the ancient traditions, and they knew this, they used it, they did it, and you get into the Western modern industrial carbon fuel age, and it's like, we're such hardcore mechanists. Yeah, we got to have more machines to prove to us that these non-mechanistic things exist. It's so interesting.
Yes, and what we're doing is we're using traditional engineering equipment, traditional physics equipment, to find energy that physicists and biologists can understand. And we're demonstrating that this is being used by people. So we're trying to bridge, this is one of J.B. Rhine's terms, we're trying to bridge the gap between science and spirituality to help people understand, people who are working in the scientific world to understand that it's not separate from spirituality. Spiritual experiences and science should be working together to move forward to understand more about the world.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, Bill Tiller's work at Stanford Research Institute, and he was chairman emeritus, as you know, and of the material sciences. And he got this inkling in the 60s that, you know, meditation was great and it could do things. But he wanted to, like you all, show that mind can turn matter on at a distance, and did all those early experiments in, you know, putting something in a Tesla kind of protection, in a Faraday cage, I mean, and something protecting it, and then have a meditator send an piece of information to this microchip and then turn it on from thousands of miles away. And it also reminded me a little bit when you were speaking of the Spindrift Institute studies in prayer. And their interest was not so much, I mean, they measured the change of prayer in life forms, whether it was fruit flies or larvae or mung beans or whatever. And they found that the non-directed thy will be done, where the meditator or the prayer is just hooking up to divine love, that it had a much bigger effect. And what they called it was catching the wave and not the particle, that my will is particle and thy will is wave.
Yes, it's very interesting when you look into different healing traditions, and this is another very specific interest of mine at the Rhine. When you look at different healing traditions, they have so many different mechanisms of explaining what they're doing. Mm-hmm. Some work very closely with the physical body and try to actually manipulate energy through a use of strong will. Others require just a presence, a supportive and loving presence with another person who or a thing, an animal or a plant, and allowing a transfer and a supportive environment that helps to enable healing. So it is. It's a very different. There are very different mechanisms, and we're trying to find anything we can to try to help people in more traditional sciences to understand what we know is happening.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. The things that people all across time and all across the planet experience and use. You know, it's so interesting because when you go into the native traditions and native cultures, and many people who have done that have an interest primarily in psychedelics and, you know, changing consciousness with plants. And it's a little different than changing consciousness by sitting here and opening oneself up, because the plants do what we can do without the plants. So it's interesting to me how many different humans it takes, you know, to study the angels on the pin. And when the Rhine sets up this bioenergy lab, I see one of the beautiful things you all do is offer a tremendous amount of programming. And I sometimes feel like the old 21st century radio crew are the now teachers everywhere at Monroe, at Rhine. I saw that Lloyd Auerbach is one of your teachers on apparitions, hauntings, and poltergeists.
Yes, yes. Our Rhine Education Center is an online school that we created that offers professional education in parapsychology. It is something that has been sorely lacking in the field for decades. Mm-hmm. It's very difficult to find somewhere to get professional education from parapsychologists.
Yes.
And Lloyd Auerbach is, in my opinion, the premier field investigator, or ghost hunter, as you might call, in the field of parapsychology, because he approaches things from a strictly scientific perspective. He looks for every reason that it might not be a spirit influence before he would ever take a step towards spirit.
Mm-hmm.
And this is the correct way to approach science skeptically. What is teaching? Yeah, he's currently teaching a course in apparitions, hauntings, and poltergeists through the Rhine Education
Center. It's filled
and
registration is closed.
Yes, and it's an online course, and we have students from all over the world.
That's beautiful.
In these courses. Yes, and we, you know, it's, the courses are broadcast, so you can listen to them live while they're occurring and interact with the teacher, but they're also recorded, so people who can't be there right at the moment that it's occurring can watch it at a later time. And we have discussion forums online also for people to interact, just like a normal classroom.
How lovely.
We might have discussions with other students. So this, we've been running the school for about 3 years now, and we have about 6 or 7 different courses we're offering, and it's growing every day.
I imagine it would. It's because it is true. When younger people come to me and they say, I want to be trained in this and trained in that, and I try to think of where to send them, you know, that they can do from wherever they are. This is a wonderful addition to the world. One of your courses is The Wandering Mind, Out of Body and Near-Death Experiences.
Yes, Yes, that's Nancy Zangroni and Carlos Alvarado. They team teach that course, and they have done a wonderful job putting that together, where they explore the history and the research associated with out-of-body experiences and with near-death experiences, and try to give a cohesive explanation of what these phenomena are and scientifically what we know about them.
Mm-hmm. And I think that's one of the beautiful defining things about the Ryan Institute. You know, there's so many thousands of books, and so many of them are such total junk. Maybe there's a little bit of good in some of them. I'm sure there is.
Yes.
But it's just people's feelings and their experience and their channeled this and their, and not to say that channeling isn't sometimes phenomenal, but just because a person is deceased doesn't make them the Grand Master. You know, it could be Aunt Millie telling you all about cosmic physics, and she's still in the class for watering plants, and she goes, "Oh, but I'm a great ascended teacher." So it's
as
very.
As we've said, if Uncle Al couldn't pick the lottery numbers before he was dead, why do you think he could do it now?
But it is interesting, because people do try to predict the stock market using non-local consciousness now. I forget who I recently interviewed on that. I'll remember in a minute. So we're going to take our last break of the hour, and then when we come back, I'd like to talk about another fascinating thing you all are doing with dreams and the psi experience. If you've just joined us, I want to encourage you to go visit quickly www.rhine.org, and I hope you all share my excitement and enthusiasm that there is a really phenomenal place to go online to learn all these wonderful things for yourself and those you care for.
Hi, this is Marta Williams, author of My Animal Myself. You can come visit me at my website, martawilliams.com. You're listening to 21st Century Radio with Dr. Sohara Hieronymus.
Welcome back to 21st Century Radio. Remember, all our guests and links to their websites and their work is at 21st21stcenturyradio.com. And all our shows are archived online for free, so you can listen to them whenever you choose. Joining us currently is John Kruth, who is Executive Director of the Rhine Institute in North Carolina. You can go to www.rhine.org. You can become an online student and really get properly educated in telepathy, clairvoyance or remote viewing, precognition, psychokinesis, survival studies, out-of-body experience, mind-over-matter studies. You can become a Rhine participant. You can report your experiences. And if you live down there, my gosh, what a great place to go in person and become part of some of their group work. So before the break, John, I mentioned that there are even people studying the future of the stock market, and I couldn't remember who it was, but I think it's Jeffrey Mishlove.
I'm not familiar with Jeffrey's work in that area.
Yeah, I think so, in terms of can we know the future? And so it's very interesting when it bothers me a little, I have to be honest, when people start taking what are really what Ingo Swann called biomind superpowers and using them for personal profit, because that's kind of against the law of spirit. So I'm not all sure about how it's all going to come out in the wash when everybody wakes up. It, just in the same way in some indigenous traditions, there's shamans of healing and there's shamans of killing and death. And so it's the same old division in historically between the good witch and the bad witch. So these are really realities that we all have. And when we awaken to them, I pray we use them for service and good. So talk to us, though, about this amazing experience you all are doing with dreaming, the pilot project of the OBE experience, and I think there's one on dreaming.
Yes, well, right now we are running a month that is focused on dreams. The Rhine is a nonprofit organization, and we focus mostly on research, but we have to keep funds coming in somehow. And so we continue to present these programs, and we're trying to offer something to the community and to the public at large, help them to understand more about what we study and the different parts of the science and the field. So the current month that we're running is part of our education initiative to help people understand about dreams. The entire month of March has been focused on dreams. We've had speakers come in to discuss topics such as shared dreaming, where people can work together meet each other in a dream and work together within a dream. Or perhaps they have the same dream at the same time. There's also people who have been talking about lucid dreaming, where people will become aware that they're dreaming while they're dreaming, and you can have an effect on your dream. We had Robert Wagoner, who is one of the lucid dreaming experts, come last weekend, and he not only gave us a talk on what lucid dreaming was, but he talked about how you can use lucid dreaming in your daily life to help to improve your understanding of what your subconscious mind is trying to tell you and help you to understand how you can use that to improve the way you approach the world and everything that you consider about your daily activities. We've also had speakers come in and discuss medical issues related to dreaming, people who have premonitions of medical events occurring in their dreams, and how they've taken these and gone to doctors with these premonitions and utilized these to improve their health. We've had a series just this weekend on dream interpretation with Judy Gardner. Next week, we have more discussions coming up with about the psychology of dreams and how it's used in therapy. We also have two speakers who are coming in next weekend, Diane Brandon and Bob Trowbridge, who are going to be giving workshops and speaking on how to use dreams and to help to improve your life. These are all part of a thematic event that we're doing in March to help people to dig into dreams in detail. We're doing this throughout the year with different topics, our first one on dreams. In May, we're going to be talking about PK and PK experiences, and we're going to have numerous speakers talking about PK. All of our research team meetings will be focused on PK. We have different films related to this, and all this goes on at the Rhine. Now, the nice thing about these events, though, is that our Friday night events are filmed, and they're broadcast, streamed live over the Internet. So if you go to the Rhine website, you can sign up for these events and see them from anywhere in the world. They're broadcast live, and they're recorded and stored into the Rhine Media Library, and they're available to anybody who's a member of the Rhine to watch at any time. We have about three or four years worth of speakers that have been recorded, including people like Joe McMonagle, who is one of the premier remote viewers, Larry Dossey, who we were speaking about earlier, Lloyd Auerbach, who we spoke about, Russell Targ. We have many, many speakers.
Wonderful, wonderful, wonderful people. All 21st Century Radio guests over the decades.
That's wonderful.
Yeah, it was. You know, it's so interesting because we all started out when we still had dark hair, and now we all have silver, white hair, no hair at all. And so I say, or discovered Clairol somewhere along the line. One of the things I saw on you, and that is all just, I can't tell you how happy I am to, and I didn't realize that the Rhine was offering all these online programs because it is a challenge to be able to refer people to credible institutions, particularly when they're, you know, they're not in a position where they can travel and they can't relocate to a town and maybe they already have children and families. And it's just not an option to go study on their own. And a weekend workshop does not make you enough versed in anything, but many of them add up over time. You all promoted something that I thought was fascinating. Something about, and I may have misread it, but something about measuring the telepathic awareness of emotional targets in a simulated dreamlike situation. Did I get that at all right? You're looking, because you all are looking at these I took it right off something I wrote down after studying your website for a while, looking at the physiological changes of bioenergy characteristics of psychics and healers. And then it says, or by measuring the telepathic awareness of emotional targets in a simulated dreamlike situation.
It sounds like there are two different pieces that might have been crushed together there.
Oh, okay. Because I'm going, how do you do that? How do you do telepathic awareness of emotional things in a dreamlike situation? Okay.
Well, and that second part that you're talking about, where you are talking about emotional targets.
Right.
And you're talking about trying to simulate a dream.
Yes.
This is actually work that was done related to the Gonsfeld Laboratories. the Gottsfeld Laboratories grew out of, and we have Gottsfeld Laboratories at the Rhine. There are not very many operational Gottsfeld
I'm not familiar with that.
Gottsfeld, and I'm sure you've seen this before. It's when we put people in an isolated room.
Right.
Close the door where it's kind of soundproof and it's actually electronically shielded as well. And we put them in a very relaxed lounge chair and get them very comfortable. Put pink noise, which is similar to white noise, and put it through headphones. And put half ping pong balls on their eyes. And shine a red light on the ping pong balls. The idea is to put them in a very relaxed state and make it so that they're separated and kind of isolated from their normal senses. So they're not going to be able to see anything. They're going to be, see this red light. It's very calm and comfortable light. They're going to have this kind of wave sound going on in their ears. And this lowers their normal perceptive abilities. It simulates an altered state of consciousness that you might get when you're in dreams, when all of your normal senses are quieted down and the other subtle signals that might be coming through are being expressed from your unconscious and coming into consciousness. So we'll put one person in a room, put them in that position and in this condition, get them very relaxed, and ask them to speak stream of consciousness. In another room, a very isolated room as well, we have somebody watching videos and trying to send information about the video to the person in the other room. So this is a telepathic communication. Now, again, I'm talking telepathic, but it's really general ESP.
Mm-hmm.
It's hard to say whether it's telepathy or not. But it is communication between the two individuals and providing a way to determine whether this relaxed state, this altered state of consciousness, has an effect. And through the studies that have been done through the years, it's had a tremendously significant effect on enabling people to perform well at ESP tests. In fact, it's considered one of the most reliable and repeatable methods to demonstrate ESP.
Do you have a favorite area, John, yourself? I mean, you have an opportunity to meet the best of the best and really be exposed to everything happening.
Yes, and really my traditional interest has been in healing work, which I think we spoke about a little bit earlier in the bioenergy lab. But I've moved on to working with out-of-body experiences and trying to determine whether there's any physical indications that when someone has an out-of-body experience, is something actually leaving the body? So we're taking measurements around people who are saying that they're leaving their bodies. Is it a psychological experience, or can we physically detect something that's indicating it? Trying to provide physical evidence of it.
Well, I think a really great one would be to have them astral project to some place that you measure, meaning you put them in one room, and then I don't know if you all have already done this, and they go, well, I'm going to astral project next door, and then they tell you where they're going to astral project to, and you measure to see if there's a change in the environment and if they could see anything that was there. I mean, that could be a little confusing with remote viewing, but I don't know, and in terms of healing, is it in some way your opinion, I'll just say that it is mine, that healing of this 21st century radio will be so primarily based in light and frequency?
It's possible. Like I said, with the bioenergy lab, we are finding that there is an ultraviolet light expression that occurs around many healers. Now, is that actually a mechanism that could be used to enact the healing? Is it the light that is doing it? We only can measure a certain range of light, but within that range, we are finding it consistent. But a lot of people wonder, how could light possibly help with healing? Now, there is the idea that we are all light beings, and that by a transference of light, this could have some effect on other people.
Well, and different frequencies of light, different colors of light, that light filters through.
Yeah, if you start to think in terms of, see, this is where the little scientist sits on my shoulder, right?
Yeah.
And he says things like, fiber optics transfer a lot of information using light, different frequency, different wavelengths. And if information is being transferred between people utilizing light, perhaps that's enabling a transfer of healing energies. or it's being able to transfer comfort and calmness to another person to allow them to heal themselves. So there's a lot of question about when we talk about healing, mm-hmm. what are we actually talking about? Is the healer really involved, or is the healer just an enabler?
Yeah, well, that's what I believe. We sometimes joke among ourselves, homeopaths and acupuncturists who are also doing, you know, distant healing, that kinds of thing, that we really don't need the needles or the herbs or anything if we could all just really tap into love, that it seems to be this pureness that has this corrective capacity of elevating things to like balance. And when you look at sort of general ESP, I used to ask Ingo Swann about this. Now that the Ryan Institute makes it possible for so many people to learn, what is the benefit of learning some of these talents yourself?
Well, from everything that we're finding, everyone already has these abilities. Everyone is already getting these subtle perceptions and these subtle signals. Some people just pay more attention to them.
Mm-hmm.
And some people use them more in their daily lives than other people. You can imagine, you know, there was a question that came up about what would be the evolutionary advantage? Why would people develop ESP experiences? How could this happen? Well, if you're talking about people who are many, many years ago who are walking through a field and one of them gets a subtle signal, hey, there might be some danger here, and turns to run before the other one does, and all of a sudden something jumps out and attacks the first one.
Yeah.
The advantage is obvious. The evolutionary advantage is obvious. And this could be something that would help people for many, many years. Now, there are so many people who are trying to, like as you were saying before, building machines to try to simulate these same types of things, these same types of abilities.
Yeah, that we already do.
We are all connected. We are all having an effect on each other. And these subtle signals that we're sending and subtle signals we're getting are influencing how we spend our daily lives. As you become more aware of that, and as you become more aware of how you are having these effects on other people, we can live more in harmony with each other, and we can learn to care for each other much more easily. It's as Plato said, the unexamined life is not worth living. This gives us an opportunity to look into how we work together and how we affect each other.
Well, beautifully said. John, it's such a pleasure to meet you and to share the hour with you. Let me encourage our audience to go to www.rhine.org. And ladies and gentlemen, you'll see there are all kinds of ways for you to participate. You can become a member, send a supporting donation. What a beautiful thing the Ryan Institute has done for almost 100 years.
Around the clock and breaking news now on Talk Radio 680 WCBM Baltimore and WCBM.com.
Fox News Radio, I'm Sal Giancresso.